The Guardian. It looked at first like an attack just on hospitals in the UK, but it's now becoming clear that this malicious software has run riot around the world. Russia, the United States, and many points in between have been hit by what's now a common form of cybercrime.
On Friday the 12th of May, a ransomware cyber attack created havoc among computer systems in nearly 100 countries, including the UK, Russia, the United States and China.
But it often arrives in the form of a link in an innocuous-looking email.
Of the reported 45,000 attacks, one of the worst left English hospitals struggling to function, with the malware demanding payment in exchange for unlocking encrypted data on NHS systems.
You'll have to pay a ransom, often in Bitcoin, the virtual currency.
The malware, which has been linked to the theft of cyber weapons from the US National Security Agency last year, was a stark demonstration of how damaging these attacks can be. But just how much of a threat does cybercrime pose? What are the hackers after? And with a society that's becoming more digital by the day, what can we do to ensure the good guys win?
It's very difficult to sort of put your finger on this is what cybercrime looks like and this is what it doesn't look like, but actually it's changing all the time.
They want to get money, to earn money, to steal money in any way they can. But on the other hand, they're thinking about power.
I'm Ian Sample. This is Science Weekly.
Introduce yourself so that we can put it in really nice and just say, you know, I'm so-so and this is my... Yeah, if you can just do it like that, that'd be great.
To help unpick all of this, Guardian science reporter Nicola Davis sat down in the studio with someone on the front line of cybercrime.
My name's Emily Orton. I'm a director at Darktrace and one of the founding team.
And where better to start than with a simple definition? What exactly is cybercrime?
Cybercrime is essentially a cyber attack that's been financially motivated, and it's expanding to much more than just data breaches, where criminals are selling data on black markets and getting and monetizing that data very quickly. And in fact, we're seeing much more sophisticated types of cyber criminal that perhaps are more interested in extortion, trying to threaten companies with something that's valuable to them. And you know, ransomware is a form of that extortion. Attack. And then you also have much more sophisticated, sort of stealthy attacks coming in that perhaps don't want to steal data, but actually are trying to change data, alter some digits on an account sheet, or perhaps if you're, you know, a healthcare company, and actually changing some critical data. And the implications of those types of sort of attacks against trust and confidence and the integrity of data can be much more concerning in the long term, because of course as customers, consumers, as a public, we expect that data to be absolutely reliable. And even the rumor or the suspicion that we can't trust election system, we can't trust the doctors to have the right information on our blood type, will really undermine all our confidence in really sort of critical systems. And so it's very difficult to sort of put your finger on this is what cybercrime looks like and this is what it doesn't look like, but actually it's changing all the time.
So one of the attacks that people might have heard of is the WannaCry attack, which happened earlier this year. Can you just talk me through what happened there?
Yes, so WannaCry was a ransomware attack, and that means that there was a piece of software that was infiltrated an organization, but the thing that made it so remarkable was that it was moving incredibly rapidly inside the organization and encrypting other computers within that organization, literally at computer speed. This is, you're talking about seconds, minutes, and hundreds of computers being infected. And so it got a lot of attention through it, so the sheer speed of which it was encrypting those hard drives. And then what the criminals do is they ask for a ransom payment for the safe release or the unencryption of those files.
So what they do is that this system basically stops you being able to access your own files.
Yes, exactly. So if you haven't backed up your files, if you can't access those files in any other way, you really have no choice other than to pay up the ransom.
And so this didn't just hit businesses. This also hit the NHS, which is one of the reasons why it sort of alarmed people so much, because it suddenly sort of revealed weaknesses in our systems that, as you say, we trust and rely on so much. What is it that makes modern healthcare systems so susceptible to cybercrime?
Yes, you're right. So WannaCry did hit the NHS. In fact, it wasn't a targeted attack. It was looking at any vulnerable computer. It was particularly targeting outdated systems or running legacy software, perhaps, or devices. But actually, it doesn't really care whether that's a very critical national service or whether that's any other business. So they just, the attackers are in this case very much financially motivated. But modern healthcare systems often do suffer from a patchwork of different systems and technologies. And if you think about a hospital today, it's much more than just a group of laptops and a back office. You're talking about all the devices that doctors are carrying around on the wards, and not just their personal devices, but, medical devices. And, think about all the scanning and the x-ray machines and all that. All that tends to be connected to the internet today. And so you've got all these sort of proliferation of different technologies have been added at different stages. And, in the end of the day, healthcare organizations, whether that's the NHS or in another country, they are primarily about patient care and using the best technologies to optimize the experience of the patient and the outcome. And security isn't necessarily right up there on something that they're prioritizing. But remember that this is the problem of all organizations. It isn't a healthcare problem. All organizations have this huge complexity of different technology platforms, different users coming onto their networks and coming off their networks. And it's essentially become incredibly difficult to keep track of all those different technologies, users, patterns of behavior as they sort of evolve in real time and change. And so it's a complexity issue. It's a question of scale. And therefore, as much as we can improve the devices and the software patches and try and improve our sort of defenses against a lot of attacks, we do have to recognize that threats are going to be a part of the modern digital landscape.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
Nicola was also joined down the line by a senior security researcher at the cybersecurity firm Kaspersky Lab.
Yeah, sure. Sergei Loshkin, senior security researcher for Kaspersky Lab.
Sergei and his colleagues at Kaspersky Lab traced the WannaCry outbreak and worked out that over 45,000 systems were affected in total. Something Nicola put to Sergei was whether the perpetrators left any clues as to who they are.
It's a really tough question, because usually being a security researcher, it's really, really hard to make an attribution who is behind an attack or one type of another. Because the guys who are behind this attack, they try to be as more anonymous as possible. And the only reason how we can identify them, it's probably a big cooperation between security researchers, security researching companies, and law enforcement, of course. But regarding the WannaCry attack, of course, a lot of people were investigating this attack. A lot of security researchers were actually analyzing the code. And there are some rumors or some journalists telling about this. And, of course, security researchers telling about this. And me personally, I saw the code of the WannaCry malware. There are some similarities with the other code, probably with other groups who were doing some attacks. And some people say that the North Korea is standing behind this attack, because there is some similarities in code with the Lazarus group, which attribution probably could be from the North Korean guys. But like I said, as a security researcher, there are no way we can say, okay, these guys 100% is standing behind this attack, because what only we have is a computer code, a program code, and only analyzing the code we could make some notification, but that's all.
I see. Emily, the WannaCry attack was fought back with software from your own company, Darktrace. How does this software work, and how is it different from other kinds of cybersecurity software?
Yeah, so artificial intelligence software is getting better and better all the time, and using a artificial intelligence technology like we have, for the customers that did get targeted by this, we actually were able to detect that the machines in question were behaving in a very abnormal way compared to what we'd expect their normal activity to be. And so the way that works is that the system assumes that you're compromised to some extent. It assumes that some attackers are going to get through your perimeter defense, you know, your wall around your network, where you have your firewall and where you have some preventative stuff. And so instead of sort of defending that perimeter, instead it's looking inside and it's trying to work out what's normal for your organization in a similar way that your immune system is always scanning your systems, your you know, your vital organs and the way your body works, and it's actually able to identify things like viruses and bacteria. In a similar way, this is like an immune system inside your network that's looking for abnormal activity. The thing that's kind of really different about this and sort of the breakthrough of AI, if you like, is that it's a system that's self-learning. So essentially it's always learning what's normal, and that changes. You as a user are going to sometimes change your behavior. Sometimes you will need to log in at 3 a.m. or you'll do things that are kind of strange or different. And so it's important that this system doesn't get outdated too quickly, but it's actually able to take the intelligence that it sees on a day-to-day basis and then spot anything that's new and very abnormal. In terms of the WannaCry, actually those devices are going to start behaving in a very abnormal way because what they're doing is suddenly scanning lots of different devices inside the network and trying to find the next target that they can encrypt. And so actually it's a very big spike in terms of the way we look at it from a mathematical point of view. And so we're actually able to catch that fairly quickly, you know, seconds would be talking for most cases, and then actually respond to that. And again, we talk about ransomware. It's so quick that if you're not sort of at your desk and you've seen the alert and you're going to do something about it, then it's very easy as a security person to miss that. You might be on your lunch break, or you might have been driving home for the weekend. And so, the kind of interesting thing about technology today is that AI system can not only see that it's abnormal, but actually take some action to stop the spread.
And how do you stop the spread of something like that? Is it just a case of somehow preemptively restricting access to those files by the virus, or how does that work?
Yeah, so one of the things about reacting is that what you don't want as a business is some system that's going to start interrupting your day-to-day activity. The last thing you want is that you can't access the file share you need to file your story or to do whatever you need to do that day or email the people you normally email. So the way it works is essentially, rather than sort of restricting activity, it's about enforcing what we call the pattern of life. We know what the pattern of life for that device is. We know what normal activity is. So we're actually going to say, just do your normal activity, and we'll actually stop those particular connections, the malicious connections, the ones that are trying to spread through the network and spread this virus. We're just going to disallow those specific ones. But of course, it has to be very targeted and a proportionate response for it to work in a meaningful way in an organization.
The approach Darktrace takes, then, uses technology to fight technology, and it is intelligent systems like this that may become more necessary in the ever-changing digital landscape.
Now we are living in the world of the IoT, in the world of Internet of Things, and a lot of stuff is in the world are vulnerable right now, because like I always said, that if something has an operation system, if something has application installed on this operation system, and if something has a communication channel to the outer world, this device probably could be hacked, because the code is written by humans, so the other humans could discover vulnerabilities in this code.
Something we'll hear more about after this short break. We'll also explore some of the far-reaching implications of these kinds of attacks.
Absolutely, damage has been done. In terms of citizens' trust in the election process. That's really important. That's our democracies, and we need to make sure that we are inspiring confidence in people in the democratic process.
We'll be right back. Before we kick off again, I wanted to point you in the direction of another podcast here at The Guardian. It's called Brexit Means, and as the name would suggest, attempts to finally find out what exactly Brexit does mean, apart from, of course, Brexit. So if you feel like delving into the nitty-gritty of Britain's exit from the EU, make sure to join John Henley and his experts on The Guardian's Brexit Means. To find out more, head over to theguardian.com/podcasts or search Brexit Means on your favourite podcast app. Welcome back to Science Weekly. I'm Ian Sample. Before the break, we heard Emily Orton from Darktrace talk about how her company uses AI against hackers in the cybercrime arms race. We also heard from Kaspersky's lab Sergei Loshkin about how hard it is to pin these kinds of cyber attacks on any single person or group.
People who are developing this ransomware and those who are trying to...
Something that becomes even more worrying when one considers the pace at which cybercrime is advancing.
Yeah, of course, it's an accelerating issue and it's always a arm race. For...
Something Sergei explained to Nicola Davis down the line.
Each next year, we leave, the technologies are developing from both sides, of course. So each day, the security researchers, like our companies, like many companies in the wild, we are developing the technologies to identify new threats, definitely. And the same way, the bad guys, the hackers, the bad guys at all, doesn't matter who they work for themselves or for the government, they're developing much more sophisticated technologies to hack into the everything they could reach with their hands. So it's always an arm race, and it's really hard to say who is the winning team, but we, being here security researchers, we're trying to think that we are the winning team always, and we're trying to predict new threats each year. We're trying to develop new technologies to be put in our products to protect from the completely new threats. And now we are living in the world of the IoT, in the world of Internet of Things, and a lot of stuff is in the world are vulnerable right now. Because, like I always said, that if something has an operation system, if something has application installed on this operation system, and if something has a communication channel to the outer world, this device probably could be hacked because the code is written by humans, so the other humans could discover vulnerabilities in this code. So the next few years, I think this arm race will become more and more powerful, and unfortunately, this arm race affecting common people.
So, Sergei, it sounds like you're saying there that these attacks aren't just about locking up data or even stealing data. It's also about affecting devices that we use, things like what baby monitors, automatic doors, I don't know, pacemakers. I'm not sure how far this extends.
Yes, it's not only, for example, regarding the WannaCry attack, it was not like, you know, a common ransomware. It's not. It was not a ransomware at all. It was a wiper. It was a malicious software that was programmed, coded to wipe the data, actually. So the bad guys, they're not, of course, on the first thing that they were thinking about is money. So they want to get money, to earn money, to steal money in any way they can. But on the other hand, they're thinking about power. And attacking all these devices that connected to the internet, starting from a common Internet of Things device and finishing with, for example, surgical robots. It's quite a nice and interesting target for them because they can not only earn money, for example, but they can scare people at all. So you can imagine if, for example, There are a lot of researches happening right now about remote devices for doctors, for example, surgical robot. And if someone would be able to hack a surgical robot during their surgical operations or something like that, the bad thing could happen. So they are attacking now smart cars. They're trying to attack smart airplanes and all this stuff. So for them, right now, the target landscape is really, really big. And for example, if we are protecting computers people globally, security researchers, we finally learned how to protect our computers, we finally learned how to protect our mobile devices. But when we're speaking about cars, Internet of Things, the manufacturer of that devices, they're not thinking about security protection, IT protection on the first side.
So Emily, how do you feel about that with the Internet of Things? Is this something which could affect many, many of our devices then?
Yes, absolutely. As been said, you know, Internet of Things absolutely expands the threat landscape and all these objects are hackable. And the reality is a manufacturer isn't always going to have the latest security software on their device. Products come out so quickly. So you have to assume that that is a hackable device. You have to assume that it's going to be vulnerable. And ultimately, that is the new world we're living in. What do we do about it? Well, we need, obviously, to think about an approach that's going to minimize the threats, because not everyone is trying to target you as a consumer, but it's absolutely feasible that we do have consumers becoming victims. You imagine if your smart TVs has a ransomware attack and you're asked to pay $50 or £50 to be able to watch the next episode of House of Cards. You know, it's certainly possible. So we need to take a sort of perspective of looking at overall that big data, the big sort of flows of information, and look for patterns. We have artificial intelligence. It's amazing the progress that we've seen in that area. We need to use that in more and scenarios and try and minimize threats, because cybersecurity isn't necessarily a solvable problem.
It would seem then that cybercrime is not going away. So what can we do as individuals to ensure the safety of our own devices and data?
What's your advice to individuals about what they should do with their devices?
There is only so much individuals can do to stop or to keep themselves safe from cyber attacks. I think it is important to realise that most criminals are looking for something that they can monetize. There's got to be money in it. So, you know, you've got to have a sort of sensible sort of discussion around how much data of mine is going to be useful and valuable to a criminal, and so to avoid being over paranoid. Clearly, things like good password management, probably separating personal and work, might be a question for you, depending on the industry you're working in. And there's really good advice from the government, under the Cyber Essentials scheme, to help you with this. But I think, businesses and business leaders particularly need to take this on board. And I think there's still a lot of work to do in getting CEOs, chairmen of boards to take cybersecurity seriously. Because at the end of the day, they are managing huge amounts of customer data, yours and mine. And so I think that, they do have a responsibility to protect that, using, the best approaches available to them.
Presumably this goes beyond making sure that our data is safe. It's also about our trust in our institutions as well. Is that right, Emily?
Absolutely. And I think that is the long-term bubbling risk, beneath all these sort of fast ransomware attacks or the data breaches that we read a lot about. We don't perhaps read so much about those long, stealthy attacks. And, we are seeing the beginning of this. We've had discussions over the US elections, and absolutely damage has been done in terms of citizens' trust in the election process. That's really important. That's our democracies, and we need to make sure that we are inspiring confidence in people in the democratic process. And we've had recent questions over the German election system. So this is starting now, and I think we need to start acting now to make sure we don't take for granted that critical confidence we have in data systems.
Sergey, looking to the future, is there any way of predicting who or what might be targeted next? Or is it simply a case of reacting when these sort of situations crop up?
Yes, definitely. There could be predictions. We were thinking a lot about that here in Kaspersky. And first of all, of course, the globally attacks are going to be on the rise. And I think there are going to be increase in APTs, advanced persistent threats, targeted attacks, because they already showed the effectiveness of attacking big organizations and, of course, attacking governments, because we see a really big number of successful attacks by completely different groups, by completely different governments, to attack other governments, to attack companies and stuff like that. They're going to be increased definitely in attacks on the IoT infrastructure, of course, like smart cars. And because we can see it through our statistic, we can see it through the different kind of leaks. We can see it in news, basically. And of course, there are going to be attacks against cryptocurrencies, because the cryptocurrencies themselves and the algorithms which they're using are coming into our life. And financial organizations trying to implement, for example, different blockchain technologies for example, banking transfers and stuff like that. So all these technologies would be really, really carefully researched by cyber criminals, so they will definitely attack them.
And Emily, as a sort of final word here, what do you think the take-home here is for us all when it comes to this sort of issue? I mean, is it a case of people trying to restrict the amount of technology that they're using, or is it a case of embracing it and but being with your eyes open?
Yeah, well, we are embracing technologies all the time, every day, as individuals, as families, as businesses, and so that complexity is not going to stop. In fact, it's going to get even harder to track. And at the same time, criminals are getting even better, and they're using those technologies that we're using to improve our lives to do the attacks. And so you do have a kind of cyber warfare situation. I think the real takeaway is that security teams just can't keep up manually with fighting every single battle that there is to be fought in the sort of digital infrastructures. It's happening every day on corporate networks. None of them are free from intrusion. We see this all the time at Darktrace. They've got some kind of level of threat. And so we have to embrace those cutting-edge technologies. We have to automate far more of that defense and reaction process using artificial intelligence, using new techniques. And we've got to allow the machine to fight back, because the human can't do it on his own.
Special thanks this week to Emily Orton and Sergei Loshkin. If you've got any questions, queries, or feedback, please get in touch via our new email address, scienceweekly@theguardian.com. I'm Ian Sample. This is Science Weekly.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.